Education Research. This is episode 71 and focuses on Mark Close and colleagues' pedagogical case about Laura. This is an audio version of the PEPRN blog that can be found at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Running before she can walk. Why do we have running or sustained running lessons in schools? To improve students' fitness, their endurance, to give them the knowledge of how to lead a physically active life. Yet, when it's the time of year for the running unit, how many students bring a note? How many disengaged? And how many are unable to complete the course? This podcast asks us to consider the individual needs of students and explore how we might focus on the content of endurance units in different ways. Laura. As a late developing girl of normal height, Laura, 15, has recently been told by her family physician that she has a BMI of 28. She knew she was overweight, and while she would like to do something about it, she prefers longer in bed and junk food to the breakfast and healthy meals that her family insist on. Her father certainly makes a big fuss about a good breakfast, but sleeping longer often wins. At school, she is well integrated and has good relations with the boys and girls alike. Laura's work places her in the satisfactory category, well, according to her teachers anyway, and she's never encountered any problems. While her weight isn't a big issue, she would like to lose some. That said, she has little interest in physical activity and sport and prefers to read a book or chat on Facebook. Laura's school is located in the centre of a large city and, as a publicly funded school, offers no vocational or technical courses. The students come from mainly middle to high socioeconomic backgrounds, and the school is traditional in its focus on cognitive, e.g. attainment of core subjects of maths, English and science, rather than personal development of its students. Due to the size of the school, 1200 plus, there are 10 PE teachers and classes are taught in single-sex groups by teachers of the same sex. Laura's class could be described as predominantly inactive. Out of the 26 girls, only 3 play competitive sports and only 2 engage in active leisure. Their teacher is new. She is young in comparison to the others, and unlike her predecessors, is interested in the all-round development of individuals rather than just sports performance. The girls get 2 PE lessons a week, one of 100 minutes and one of 50 minutes. The focus of the 100-minute lesson is on improving endurance and is one of the key aims for the school's curriculum and takes place outside, normally in the form of running. The girls, however, dislike getting sweaty, and while showers are provided, most girls avoid them. While some lessons occur in the autumn, others take place later in the year when it can be cold and wet. The girls are not motivated to go outside and often use medical certificates or notes from parents to avoid participation. It's only 2 weeks into the school year, but Laura has experienced drops in blood pressure in the early morning. This is a new problem, and a teacher is concerned about what to do and how to manage it safely. From Laura's perspective, engaging in PE might make the problem worse, especially when she feels out of breath when she exercises at any intensity. Let's look at the pedagogical case in more detail. Close and colleagues explore Laura's case from 3 perspectives: physiology, fitness training, and psychological, before they offer an overview and some ideas from a pedagogical perspective. Physiologically, Laura is considered overweight and, as such, is carrying higher levels of body fat than is considered healthy. While it would be easy to take a simple energy in and energy out equation and apply it to Laura's case, Close and colleagues suggest a more complex view is needed. They suggest that there are 3 mechanisms that contribute to daily energy expenditure, and these act in different proportions depending on the individual: basal metabolism rate, diet-induced thermogenesis, and the energy cost of physical activity. Please see the links on the blog. That said, while weight is influenced by numerous biological, genetic, and socio-environmental factors, Laura's free time activities point towards issues, such as a lack of physical activity and poor diet, that could be addressed. Laura's drop in blood pressure, hypertension, could be explained in a number of ways. One explanation might be that it is caused by gravity-induced blood pooling in the lower extremities, and that the dizziness is caused by sudden shifts in body position. Another might be fatigue, which might have occurred when Laura shifted her sleeping habits from summer holiday to school time patterns. An alternative might be low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, caused by an overnight blood sugar dip that isn't addressed at breakfast time. While skipping breakfast is seen by many as a mechanism to be thinner, it can actually make weight control more difficult. Research shows that breakfast skippers tend to eat more food at the next meal. Physical fitness is one of the determinants of athletic performance, and endurance is seen as representing the most valuable factor. However, while for athletes endurance means maintaining the highest possible level of performance, for normal citizens, endurance helps to sustain physical activity at low to medium intensity in daily life. Endurance has been strongly linked to the aerobic resources of the body, and this means both aerobic power and capacity need to be considered. Aerobic power training aims to improve VO2 max and is linked to MAV, maximal aerobic velocity, i.e. the running speed at which aerobic energy production is at its maximum. This underlies a personal potential to perform. Research suggests that young people are better equipped to recover from performing exercise at high aerobic power than long-duration, low-intensity exercise. Consequently, Close and colleagues suggest, with young people, aerobic training should first focus on intermittent exercises and interval training rather than long-duration endurance training that should instead be introduced progressively during adolescence. Close and colleagues suggest that schools and teachers should encourage activity that involves more than two-thirds of the body's muscles, involve intense levels that challenge the energy systems, focus on aerobic power, are individualised, and which are all maintained throughout the school year. Laura and her friends, this should involve a mix of activities that can break up the training monotony and maintain motivation. And there should be staged activities that gradually, with an increased load of no more than 10%, allow her to meet progressive targets. Psychologically, adolescence is characterised by change. Teenagers either adopt healthy behaviours or unhealthy behaviours, or choose a place on that continuum. In Laura's case, she's ambivalent towards physical activity and healthy eating, and neither seem to be a priority in her life. It is important, therefore, that her teacher, with the help of other professionals if needed, tries to understand what factors or triggers contribute to this ambivalence. When she considers leading a healthy lifestyle, what triggers, cognitions, emotions, behaviours and consequences does she experience? A similar approach could be taken with her drop in blood pressure, as this would allow her to start to anticipate such an event and gain a sense of control. Similarly, by understanding the anxiety she experiences when she links her interest in being slimmer with a possible bout of exercise and the risk of feeling faint, Laura could begin to change her learned behaviour. By analysing her perceptions about practice, physical activity, being healthy and being slim, not the same thing, Laura can find her own solutions and take ownership of her own health-related behaviours. It seems, pedagogically, that the approach of Laura's physical education teacher, and I would suggest my own and many others' approach, to endurance has been inappropriate. Repeated absenteeism and non-participation in endurance lessons suggest that we need to develop more pedagogically appropriate approaches to this important component of health and physical fitness. Sustained, same-paced running is often seen as the activity associated with endurance, yet it seems consistently unpopular. Close and colleagues suggest that students need to learn through clear improvements and by demonstrating adaptability to different environments, gain pleasure and increase self-esteem if they are to improve their endurance and engagement. To do this, Laura's teachers need to improve, diversify and update their lessons. They need to see learning as developmental and not assume that everyone can run. By introducing and informing students about the aims of the unit and inviting them to be involved in the informed selection of activities, students will feel connected to their learning. By helping them to understand the steps to running, i.e. recovery and brisk walking, students can practice these techniques and understand the physical loads they might experience and hopefully improve in the unit. By encouraging the students to be physically active 2 to 3 times a week, the sole emphasis is taken away from the lesson, and physical activity becomes something young people do out of school. Regular self-assessment, individualised programmes and an end-of-unit target, say an organised 5-kilometre run/walk, might all contribute to helping students to see that they run to be fit. It seems obvious that endurance in school needs to be taught and that running shouldn't always be the default tool to measure and teach endurance. We need to start with the basics and help students to develop. After all, we wouldn't expect children to understand advanced algebra, so why do we expect them to understand how, or be able to, run for sustained periods? If you're thinking about making some changes, I would recommend Vicky Goodyear's vlog on sustained running as a great starting point. So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, your sessions and your context? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Thanks for listening, and given the Easter holidays, join me in a couple of weeks for the next Pepin podcast, where I'll discuss Dean MacDonald and colleagues' pedagogical case about Joshua. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast, and in getting it out on time and in a semblance of coherence. However, it is important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. Note. There are often hyperlinks in the blog that are not noted in the podcast. Please see the blog for the full story. Thank you.